chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Lucas Rugley on the show today. Lucas is the founder and executive director of Love the Lou. Well, Lucas, I have been looking so forward to this time with you. Oh my goodness. You know, I had heard your name and I'd heard Love the Lou from a lot of different people. But I have to give a shout out to our mutual dear brother, Derek Kassebaum, who said to us last year, said, Greg and Lisa, I want you to meet my friend Lucas. And that is when Greg and I first met you.
Yeah. And man, I'm glad you mentioned Derek's name. So he is a dear friend who has also written a book that came out recently. So
yes, he did. Yeah. So I would encourage our listeners to go and look for that. Derek is the Kassebaum family owns Cosmos. If you're a St. Louis person, you probably know that organization, but just a really fantastic family. But, you know, Greg and I, when we heard your story, Lucas, we were both moved. We were inspired. And we were excited about what you are doing to bring transformation to North St. Louis City. And so we immediately said, what can we do? How can we get involved? And so I'm really happy to say, and we're going to talk a lot about this because I'm hoping other people that listen will want to get involved too. But we brought our whole Technology Partners team down in May. Yeah.
It was a great trip.
It was a fantastic trip. It was such a blessing for everyone involved. I think everyone came away from there just really so grateful to have had the opportunity to meet you guys and to see what you're doing and to get involved. Some people on our team worked on the Enrichment Center. I saw people sweeping and moving furniture and doing that. Allie and I, our youngest, which some of our listeners know about, we got to work in the community garden, which was really special. But, you know, I want to dig into all of this, Lucas. I want to really dig into Love the Lou. But I have to start with, how did you grow up? Because I know that you're a Missourian by birth.
Yeah, I grew up in Jackson, Missouri. So very rural. I always throw the joke out that, you know, my neighbors were cows. And that's actually true. Like across the road, it wasn't a street. It was a gravel road. There was a cow pasture, you know, it was one of those gravel roads where, I think you probably have maybe 5 or 6 houses all together kind of close to the road. And then anything else is like back in the woods, you know, where you can't really see. Went to Jackson High School, loved it, had a really good, good childhood, lots of great stories to tell.
What did you do? What were your interests when you were young?
Well, basketball was huge. I just assumed I was going into the NBA, you know, at 10. And, I wasn't really a big hunter or fisherman, but my family all was. But I love sports and really enjoyed being outside and running around. We had 12 acres, so I got to do a lot with that. When I was a teenager, I was able to learn some instruments. So we started a band in high school. That was a blast.
What instrument did you play? Were you a vocalist or did you play an instrument?
Yeah, I did vocals and guitar, kind of taught myself guitar. And, you know, we had really baggy jeans and grew our hair as long as our moms would let us. And we thought we were really cool. I still think that's probably, you know, my peak then. You know, I was super cool. Yeah, it was great. We did a lot. I had about 17, when I was about 17, Jesus Became Real, where it was just if this story is true, then my whole life needs to be dedicated to him. And so that kind of set me on a path, even with the music stuff, was kind of on a path to say, okay, whatever we're doing it for Jesus, you know? And so it has,
I love it.
Yeah, I really haven't looked back from that age on.
Yeah, I love that. I know I read that, where you said that he really did become real. He changed your heart. He changed your motives, yeah. You know, and ultimately has been the driver in your life for what you're even doing today. So go ahead and talk to us about that, because then you went on to get a bachelor's degree, in youth ministry.
Yeah, got a degree in youth ministry. I met my wife my senior year of college. We got married the following year, moved out to Oregon. I worked with a church plant in Portland, Oregon, until we really, about 5 years or so, felt God calling us back to St. Louis. And that was to essentially move into the neighborhood and to start this organization called Love the Lou. We planted a church at the time. So the church and Love the Lou were two full-time jobs, which was a lot. I don't know that I would do that the same way going back, but that's how we did it. And, you know, it was just... that was 12 or 13 years ago now, that all happened, but we've been on that journey ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking as you said that, it was two full-time jobs for one person. Yeah, you know, and I'm sure your wife was involved as well, but you know, that's a lot, you know, both have continued to thrive. So I want to talk to you about this, because when you moved your family back, it's you and Alana, and you know, you've got young children. Some of those children have been born there, but you moved back into this historic home in North St. Louis. I think it's the 4100 block of Enright. Tell our listeners, and if they're from St. Louis, but we have people from all over the globe that listen, Lucas, so they are not going to know this, but you know, tell us a little bit about the history of that area, because you know, I know that 10 blocks north of there, it was the home of Chuck Berry.
Yeah. Right? Chuck Berry, Tina Turner grew up off of Whittier as well, which is kind of the corner street that we're at. Our house was built in 1879. So it's this beautiful three-story brick. I mean, three layers of brick. I don't know how many tornadoes we've been through, you know, in the last 150 years, but I mean, it's still standing. And I feel like it's just a beautiful, beautiful old restored city home. It's kind of weird to think about, but like 1879 is... you know, the Civil War had just ended, and you have freed slaves that are moving northward. And so our house was built with two staircases, where you have your front staircase and your back staircase. So you had, you know, essentially freed slaves, but very cheap labor. The help was living in the back or at least working in the back part of the house while the family lived up front. And then in the 1920s, our neighborhood kind of turned over to an all black community. And it's been that way for 100 years now. But on Enright, where I am, it's always been the who's who of the African-American community. And so there was a lot of lawyers and doctors that lived in those homes from the 20s all the way up until like the 60s. And then the neighborhood kind of changed to what we see today from the 60s on. I've gleaned a lot of that information from talking to a lot of my neighbors. So that's a conglomeration of their stories and the history of it. But it's really fascinating stuff. St. Louis is so special with our history. Like a lot of people don't understand and maybe cherish that as much, but like we have such a rich history. Every neighborhood has stories of like Miles Davis used to walk on my street with his trumpet case. And like there in his autobiography, like he talks about like turning the corner, you know, and going and playing at one of the clubs that was on the Pendleton Boyle area, which is just awesome. That's just incredible. So
it is. Yeah. I mean, you know, the way, you know, me reading and the way that you described it, I mean, Lucas, very thriving community. Yeah. Thriving community. You talk about, you know, it was kind of considered the porch culture because nobody had air conditioners, right? And so people would sit out on their porch in their rocking chairs and neighbors, you know, would get to know one another. And it was a thriving community. Yeah. And now it's really described as a food and resource desert. So you decided to move your family, not just to work, you know, at an arm's length, but you said, no, we're moving into the neighborhood. What were you hoping to accomplish when you did that?
I think it's really just recognizing who Jesus is, what Jesus does, and then trying to follow his lead. Like Jesus has a way of getting into all of our lives, and into the mess of our lives and really not, not being distant from us, but actually being near to us. And so if we truly want to see St. Louis changed, if we want to see North City changed, if we want to love our neighbors, love the Lou, well, then we're going to have to be there. We're going to have to, you know, incarnationally live and not just drive in as a 9-to-5. And that's easy to comprehend. And it's easy to understand that, you know, God himself stepped out of heaven and came to earth in the form of a baby. And, you know, we celebrate that with Christmas as a holiday. That's hard to do. That's a hard example to follow, but it is, I think it's the most potent example. And not that you can't do it other, you can do ministry all kinds of ways, you know, but when you get into people's lives next to them, on the off hours, that's whenever it really bears a lot of fruit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of relationship first.
It is.
You know, I mean, really, that's what it boils down to. And really making love, not just a word on the wall, but it's truly an action, right? And yeah. And it's hard to do that, you know, when you're not really there. But, you know, when you moved in, you identified for you guys, you said that you kind of just watched, you know, you kind of just watch what happened. You watch what the kids did after school. And, you know, you talked about this and you said county kids, I mean, parents are driving them to tennis and to piano lessons and gymnastics and doing all this stuff. But there, that was not the case. And kids were just kind of wandering around aimlessly looking for something to do. So you identified what you call the top three needs, Lucas. And I would love for you to talk about each of these because you've got a program for each of these. So you've got housing is one, and you've got your St. Louis Live program. Jobs is another. People need jobs, right? That's part of, you've got to be able to put food on the table. You got to be able to pay your light bill, et cetera, et cetera. St. Louis Link. And then the mentoring, which is really about the youth. And I do want to dig more into that. But can you explain further each of these programs and a little bit more about what each of them do and the objective?
And we've even grown even in the last 6 months of how we're thinking of ourselves and thinking of the program. So we like what you're mentioning there are the three biggest needs, but it's really community development. And by that, what I mean is like the neighborhoods on the north side are destabilized. You mentioned a food desert. But it's a resource desert. Like the systems are failing. There are countless stories that I could tell where you feel hopeless because where other places in America would just, it would be a given that, you know, potholes would be filled and, you know, sidewalks would be cleaned up or whatever the case might be. This is one of those marginalized places where there aren't those resources. So community development's a key idea in the work that we're doing because we're addressing needs. So we do it in three ways. We will go deep into neighborhoods and live and be, and we'll take vacant lots and turn them into gardens. We'll take those gardens and hire neighborhood kids to run them. This year, it's our first summer where we don't really have outside supervision for any of that. So the gardens are 100% run by North City young adults who grew up doing it as kids, who are now leading the kids in North City. It's really beautiful. We are getting like, you know, a lot of wisdom and stuff from outsiders because we're still learning. That kind of idea where we're getting to not just know the neighborhoods, but we're knowing the names and people in the neighborhoods. And we're constantly doing that. We've got you mentioned earlier, like this block, this enrichment center area. We're developing an entire city block at the corner of the intersection of four different neighborhoods. We're calling it a resource hub, but it's a place where people can come and get resources. So we just had somebody today that is in need of housing. We have people all the time needing jobs. And so it's a place where we're building out a job pathway, a structure for getting jobs, a housing pathway, a mentoring pathway, all of these things where the more you're coming and showing up, the more we're able to then give you resources that wrap around who you are. And really, you know, we use the word holistic a lot, but the idea is to surround the individual and community. And so that's becoming a community hub. And then the third thing that that you have already alluded to is that we've got a LIFT mentoring program where we walk people from basically 12 years old up to about 25, but decades worth of relational work, where we're helping people get jobs, get housing, move into careers. Everybody's expected to graduate. Everybody's expected to grow. Everybody's expected to learn why they were created and who they are. And so it's discipleship, if you want to think of it like that, but it's not just Bible study. It's like, why am I created type work? And then let's take this word and live it. And so it gets really exciting to work and live and do the study all at once. And so now I said that nice and neat here, I guess kind of nice and neat, but really, it's just about the relationships. Ultimately, it's community building. I really believe that the church is the people of God on mission. So that it's that the church isn't about a building, and so we get to kind of do church work in a sense, in a pure sense of the word, because we're just, it's just a bunch of people that are growing mm-hmm. and we're heading in the right direction. We're allowing God to shape us. And believe it or not, some of the most spiritual giants you'll ever meet are living in North St. Louis right now. So this is not one of the misconceptions is that it's, you know, a bunch of thugged out gang members or whatever you want to, whatever language you want to give to it. But it's not, it's every neighborhood will have a few people that, that you know about that you're like, okay, those are the ones to avoid. And we've got that. But we've got also, some just amazing matriarchs and patriarchs that, have been faithful for years and years. And so we get to tap into that for the vision of where we're heading.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Well, it's really you plus them and plus God, obviously God number one, you know, that's going to bring about the transformation here. So it's not you coming in and saying, oh, we've got all the answers. Right. You know, it's not about that. I think, you know, we'll talk about this more in our second half. But I think, you know, for there is a quote that I love in your book, and we'll talk about this, but your book just came out, When the Sirens Stop, and we're going to talk about this, but you've got, there is a quote, and I'm looking for it here. It's a quote in the book that says, and I just love it, by Dr. John Perkins. Here's what he says. People often say they need to be a voice for the voiceless, which sounds good, but often ends up becoming imperialism and patronizing. The oppressed already have a voice. The problem is no one is listening. And Lucas, I think that that is a differentiator for you guys. I mean, you're listening and you're there working together. So we've got so much more. I've got pages and pages of notes here that I want to cover with you, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Lucas Rugley on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Lucas Rugley. We've been talking about all kinds of amazing things and love the Lou. And so, Lucas, we were talking a little bit about the mentoring program. So I would love to talk more about this and dig in here. So realistically, you say you cannot reach all of the kids in St. Louis. You cannot. But you know, there's a multiplicity factor here, Lucas, because if you reach one, that one may go on to reach hundreds. You know, mm-hmm. you just don't know the impact of that, right? You know, and I love the idea you talk about giving these kids 100 different experiences that they would not have otherwise. So mm-hmm. I'd love for you just to speak into that a little bit. And then I'll ask you a few more questions about some of the actual stories.
Yeah. I think a lot of times when we're leading organizations, you know, we work through vision statements and different exercises where we're trying to reach, ultimately the world. Our message has to go out to the world. And that's a really daunting task, but it's, I don't know that's what Jesus does. I don't think that's what Jesus has done with me. Jesus, I've always wanted to like reach the world and to, you know, to go into all the nations and all that kind of thing. And God seems to kind of nod along and like, yeah, that's great. Let's start with you. And then I don't know how much we've ever moved past him working on me. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but what I'm saying is like, there's such a power in reaching one, and staying there and letting that be your focus, of like whoever's in front of me is the most important person, that God has put in front of me. And instead of getting ahead of ourselves, with trying to reach everybody all at once. And so we're doing that approach, with Love the Lou, as best we can. Our numbers are small with the mentoring program. This year, we will reach 50. In years past, we've had goals of 60. We've had goals of 30. So 50 is actually a lot for us, because we're saying that we will connect deeply with 50 individuals, 50 students. And then with the multitude of sponsors and team leaders and mentors and enrichment leaders and different aspects of our program, each kid will be surrounded by not just 100 different experiences that they wouldn't get, you know, in North City, but also all kinds of new relationships of people that, and it's not just city and county that we're merging, or rich and poor, or black and white, but it's kind of all of the spectrum, to where you get all kinds of unique personalities that are coming into the city and offering gifts and talents and time to pour into these kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is so good. Well, tell me a little bit more, because I know, like I said, some of our team members were working on the Enrichment Center. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about what goes on there, because you guys have got, you know, what I would call like a makerspace. And you're doing pop-up shops, and, you know, tell us a little bit about that. You're teaching kids about entrepreneurism.
Yeah, we've got, we do call it a makerspace. We've got lots of different tools. We have an entire skills center, which is like a woodworking shop. On Saturdays, we'll, throughout the summer, but then fall and spring as well, we'll have a semester's worth of Saturday classes that are all volunteer led. And so we'll have volunteers teaching, we call it enrichments, but it's like, it's these skills that build your confidence in an area, but also show you what you might like. So for example, we'll do woodworking. We're doing a coding class this summer, which has been a lot of fun. We're doing, small engines and art and baking and small business. And so really trying to find skills that students could enter into. And if they like it, we can keep handing them more and more responsibility, which mm-hmm. gets into the makerspace idea. We've got kids that are launching their own businesses. We're walking alongside of them. Some of them have progressed and are, you know, coming up with marketing plans, and some of them are like at the very beginning level of just doing, you know, t-shirts and like actually making some things. But there's a whole spectrum where people are making and creating. And it reminds me, like, there's a story, back in the day, St. Francis, where he felt called to rebuild the church. And so he goes and he physically gets a lot of marginalized people, but he's physically rebuilding this old church building. And when they finish, he realized that his call wasn't the physical work of building the church, but the spiritual and relational components of all those relationships that were built. And I think that's what excites me the most, is like the block, that's what we call it. But the block is an area where the door is constantly opening with new relationships and people coming in to make things and create things and to hang out and to watch people make things. And so so it's been a lot of fun to be a part of. We've only had it for a year. But it's really morphed into this beautiful expression of community.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I know some of our guys got really jazzed, you know, after we were there. Yeah. And, oh, I could go teach this, or I could go teach that. And, you know, I just think too, I think, Lucas, what's so important is exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, exposure. I mean, I look back at myself when I was a teenager. I didn't even know what the possibilities were. well, these kids are no different. You know, they don't really, and they, you know, I mean, I they don't even have role models sometimes, you know, that they can look at and say, oh, you know, this is what it looks like to be an accountant or whatever. So I love what you're doing. Well, I know that, you know, for confidentiality purposes, Lucas, you can't say a lot of names or anything like that, but I'd love for you just to actually tell a story or two. And I know he wouldn't mind because he told us his story. Jamel, I love that kid. He has got such an amazing story. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about Jamel?
Sure. So I actually, so the book that is now out is called When the Sirens Stop. And what I did was I had this process where I wrote down a lot of lessons that we had learned in 10 years of working. And that was really boring to read. And so this was the writing process for me took forever. But after we had gotten that version, I kind of flipped it around and realized that we had come to these conclusions through a whole bunch of stories. And ultimately, there's four people that the book focuses on. There's my neighbor, Miss Sharon, who also I can talk about freely. And she's awesome. She's a person of peace. She has done so much to make our neighborhood better. And Miss Sharon's the type that when she says it, you listen, because she just kind of has that authoritative tone to her. She's one of the matriarchs that I'm saying, like, within her vision, North City's in really good hands. So we talked about her. I talked about a guy named Marcus, who, and I'm changing some names here too, but Marcus was a gang leader. I talked about this kid, Jamel, who I had met, and Jamel, I met him when he was like 10 or 11, I don't know. And he's much older now. He's much wiser and mature. But the hope that I have for North City, outside of the Miss Sharons that are prevalent, is kids like Jamel. And Jamel has this fire in him. Jamel used to walk to our church services, and he would walk through North City on a Sunday morning, about 2 miles. I'm not exaggerating. You expect me to say like uphill both ways in the snow, that kind of thing. But for real, like this kid has been hungry since I've met him, not just for spiritual things, but he's been hungry for community and he's been hungry for bettering himself. I sat down with him, this was probably a year or so ago, and we were reflecting, and Jamel and I have such a history now that I can, we can kind of go back, you know, like further than a decade and talk about all of the adventures we've been on. And I said, what is the thing that, you know, made the biggest difference, you know? And because we've gone on trips, we've spent lots of money, we've done businesses, we've done all kinds of things together. And so, you know, he's been a part of our Love the Lou family for a while. And, you know, from the beginning, so what made the biggest difference? What was it? And he recounted a time when my family, and this was when he was really young, but he said, we were all sitting down to eat, and I had invited him and his brothers over to eat with us. And we were all sitting down at the table, and he looked around the table and he was like, this is what I want. And I thought that was really important for me to hear and for everybody to hear, because we've spent, as an organization, we've spent tens of thousands of dollars like chasing this kid down and supporting him. And, you know, there are countless people who have mentored and loved, and he is, he's got some amazing qualities and he's always had them, and he's had a really good network of support. And at the same time, the biggest game changer for his life was sitting down at a table with a family, looking around and being like, yep, this is what I want. And so I want to encourage everybody to know there's no small actions of love. Like there's no such thing. Like this is like, I don't remember that day. I don't remember that meal. I know it's a rhythm that our family had, where, yeah, like, let's invite neighbors in to eat with us. And that turned out to be, for him, maybe one of the most important lessons of his life. But for me, that was just something that we had made up our minds that, you know, this is the kind of family we want to be. We made up our minds that we want to eat meals together, you know, like those, that's a little thing, but it's such a big deal, you know? And so I think that all of us kind of have, you know, this time throughout our day where we can look at how we're loving others. And it doesn't have to be with a nonprofit. It doesn't have to be official service time. It's just these little glimpses of being with people. And my challenge and my encouragement is like, take advantage of that. Like make some time throughout your week to be doing those loving actions, those little loving actions, because that's what'll change people.
So good. Yeah, I would encourage our listeners, and we'll talk about where can they get your book? Tell our listeners where they can get your book, When the Sirens Stop. But how did you come up with the title for the book, Lucas? I haven't asked you that question.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna give you both answers. I'm gonna start with saying, and I'm gonna repeat this maybe, but brickcityshop.com is where the book can be purchased. You can go on Amazon and that's fine, but I'm working with a group of entrepreneurs in North St. Louis who are starting up brickcityshop.com. And everything at brickcityshop.com is from the North Side. So it's all people that are working in some form or facet of business there. And so I knew that actually all the proceeds of this book go to Brick City Shop. And I knew that, that was just going to be it was going to be those next steps is like, not only will the book need to get out there, but it's actually going to promote business within North City, which is just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So the title comes, so the idea is that we actually live in a neighborhood where the sirens stop. And so you'll hear a siren off in the distance, you won't necessarily pay attention to it, but then you'll hear like a second siren, usually from the opposite direction, and then a third, and then an ambulance, and then a low horn of a fire truck. And you realize that they're all coming to you, and that where you're at in that part of the city is where the sirens are stopping. And when the sirens stop, like, it means trauma. It means don't turn on the news because you're going to know somebody's name. It means hopelessness. It's frustrating because like everything kind of winds down. It gets louder, 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 and then it just stops. And that stopping feeling is, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to like most neighborhoods have, you know, you'll hear a siren and then it'll come and it'll get louder and then it'll just fade off in the distance. Mm-hmm. This is an environment that you get to experience sirens like ending, and then they pull out yellow tape, and then there's this whole drama, like neighbors will come out, and so that's the first part of the book. And this is a heavy book because there's a lot of like, I'm not trying to pull any punches, I'm just trying to tell you what my experience has been. But I've got a couple points, and the reason I'm telling all the stories is because there's an overarching theme that needs to be shared. And this is really important. We haven't had a shooting death on our block in 7 years now. So for the last 7 years, change has been happening on InRight. And the question is, how did that change come about? And who's responsible for casting that vision of change? And why is it consistently now, year after year after year, a different neighborhood? Like, why is that? And I'm going to go back to people like Miss Sharon. So when you read it, you need to pay attention to what Miss Sharon says, because she's given it to you. It's like she's given you all the gold. And you need to pay attention to some of the decisions that Jamel makes. And even the character of Marcus, you need to pay attention to who he is, because if you just watch the news, you're gonna believe that, oh, well, he deserves to be locked up and he deserves this and he deserves that. And this boy, who is now a young man, has a lot to him, and he's not a bad guy. And so all of these characters are actually part of the solution. And so we get to the end, and I'm giving away some of this, but you got to read it. And Jesus is putting the city back together again. He's putting my neighborhood back together again to where we haven't had any sirens. Like the sirens are literally stopping.
Yeah.
Like we're at a spot where 7 years ago, people were scared to come out of their door onto their front porch. And it had gone from this beautiful porch community where everybody's hanging out to like fearful. We don't know what's going to happen. Too many drive-bys, hopelessness, depression, like addiction, like we're unhealthily coping, like all this stuff happening to like this is a place where I could raise a family. This is a place where we could be, where things are getting stable and we're seeing some flourishing. We're proud of it. We're wanting to stay. We're not running from it. And so the sirens are stopping, in North City, and that people don't understand it. They don't, and they might not even believe it. So look up, read it. You're welcome to challenge, me politically, spiritually, any possible way you want, with your own views. But I'm tossing out my experience. I'm tossing out like a white boy from Jackson, Missouri, moving into a black neighborhood. And I had wanted to be the one that was changing everybody else. And really I'm the one that's changing. And I'm seeing, these people of peace that when they get their voice, watch out. Like it's good news.
Yeah. It is good news. It is good news. Well, let me ask you this, and then we're going to talk about something extra. You know, what's next? What is next for you? Where do you right now, if we've got listeners and they say, wow, this is really resonating with me. My heart is being pricked here. I want to be part of this transformational story. Where do you need the most help right now, Lucas? Where do you see yourself going from here? I'm sure you've got big, hairy, audacious visions.
Always. You know, so this is my encouragement to everybody that is outside of the North City environment. Okay. So if you're out in the county and you're listening to this, let me give you just a couple challenge pieces, because we've been doing this for a while and we think about it a lot. You should pick up the book. Yes, all the proceeds go to brickcityshop.com, and that's where you can find it. But pick up the book because it's going to help you understand some of the dynamics and maybe even answer some of the questions you might have. Number two, you should come down. If you go to lovelulu.com, you're going to be able to sign up. You can sign up for a work day. You can come down on a Thursday. But if you reach out to us, we'll give you some direction on how to get involved. And the biggest thing that I want people to wrestle with at this point is just to say, how much time can I give to being a part of the solution? So money is great. If you want to send us $1 million check, that's great. Love the Lou. We'll take it. And that's awesome. And there's a lot of need for money. But if we can be honest here, and I'm in charge of bringing in money for Love the Lou. So that's part of my job. So I'm doing a bad job of it when I say this. $1.5 billion is given in the St. Louis region, like given to charity. We're a very generous city. We are. There are generous people where I think we need to grow is with our time. And I'm going to challenge us all. I believe that there are thousands, you could make the argument millions, of people who love the Lou. Show it. This is the show me state. Show it. Let's see it. So if you're writing $1 million check, then I'll give you a week off. That's awesome. That's great. I get it. That's perfect. But for a lot of us, maybe the majority of us, like, let's show it through some action. Let's go to lovethelou.com. And the consistency of your time is what is going to bring about change. And it's going to bring up, it's going to build this bridge of reconciliation that we need. And what I mean by that is, like, if you have 1 hour a month, that's awesome. We'll take it and we'll tell you how you can use that the most. If you have 2 hours a week, that's great. I don't think that God is going to call everybody to move their family from the county into North City. So that's not an expectation, but I can guarantee you somebody out there has maybe every single day that they could give something to North City and to show that love, to demonstrate it. So we've got groups that will come once a year and we plan around it. We know they're coming every single year and we build it and we build it and we build it and we just keep growing and growing with that relationship. We've got people that come once a month. We got people that come once a week and we got people that come every single day. I'm not going to speak for you, but be challenged by that. Like, our neighbors need your life, need your relationship. And that is
presence,
true.
Presence, really. I'm thinking, you know, it's like presence, not P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, but presence, the other presence.
Yep. Lucas. And, let's flip it around. You need our neighbors. Like, so if you're listening to this, you need to get to know Keisha and Tawana and Miss Sharon and Jamel. You need to meet some people that are here that have stronger faith than almost all the pastors I've ever met. All of the leaders, like, there are some amazing, amazing individuals here. And when we know it and we can put the name to it, that actually makes our region stronger and begins to address some of the biggest needs that we have as a city. And we didn't get into this, but, like, in case you didn't know, the Del Mar divide is a real thing. And there's city-county divide that is keeping us. And there's a St. Charles versus St. Louis County divide. And there's a river that divides us between Illinois and those people and, you know, the people that are over here. And so we have to change the narrative from being us versus them to it's us.
Yeah, I agree. I love it, Lucas. Oh, my goodness. Well, I hope that a lot of our listeners are going to reach out to you and you're just going to be flooded with people that want to get involved. But Lucas, I got to ask you, if this is called Something Extra, and what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Lisa, I've thought about this. I've agonized over this. What is the something extra? I think, in a word, it's sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And yes, I could say love, but when you truly love, you're laying down your life. You're laying down your vision. You're laying down your kingdom. And so what I've learned the hard way, and God is still molding it into me, is that leaders need to, and we believe this, like all of us, especially when you're starting something, but we need to sacrifice and we need to keep that at the forefront. It will be less about us and our work and more about all mm-hmm. of the others. And so my team is very important to me because my team is actually now made up of mostly neighbors. And those are the ones that I've come to serve in the first place. And so the more that they get their voice, and I've got lots of ideas, but more they get their ideas out, the better we are as a city, but the better we are as an organization. So it's a daily sacrifice, and it's something extra, and it's not easy, but we have to be reminded of it.
Yeah. Well, I need to wrap this up, Lucas, because I'm crying. I need to get a tissue. You just really, really touch my heart. I've never had anyone say that, but I do believe that when we love, when we're really loving like we are called to love, there is sacrifice. There's sacrifice, but there's joy in that sacrifice, right? So, I have just loved our time together. Thank you so much for making the time. And I can't wait for our listeners to hear more about your story and Love the Lou.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.